Welcome to NASA Edge,
an inside and outside look at all things NASA.
We're here at Sunspot, New Mexico, at the Sunspot Solar Observatory, just below the historic and scientifically amazing Dunn Solar Telescope. And I got to tell you, Franklin, it's impressive.
Very much so. We're here to celebrate the heliophysics big year. It's a global celebration of the sun's influence on Earth and the entire solar system. The heliophysics big year is centered around big events taking place during solar maximum that will allow everyone to experience solar science firsthand.
And one of those events is none other than the 24 total solar eclipse. Now, back in 2017, we saw the total solar eclipse at Southern Illinois University, and it was amazing. Fortunately, this time, the path of totality again goes across the United States. So many millions of people are going to be able to see that total solar eclipse in person.
But before we can get to solar maximum and the heliophysics big year, we have to ask one question. What is heliophysics?
That's a great question, Franklin, and I can't think of a better person to talk to than the queen of heliophysics, Nikki Fox. Nikki is the NASA Associate Administrator for the Science Mission Directorate and a heliophysicist in her own right. Recently, I spoke to her at NASA headquarters at the Earth Information Center to learn more about the sun. Nikki, we're so excited to be celebrating the heliophysics big year. But before we get started, what exactly is heliophysics?
So I like to think of heliophysics as the very first science discipline because it is the study of our own star, the sun. And if you imagine, people from the very beginning have stared up at the sun in wonder. It has sparked myths, it has sparked legends, it's brought joy, it's brought fear. So people have always wondered, what is that bright light in the sky? And that's basically heliophysics. We study our star, the sun, and its impact on the whole solar system. Obviously, the planet we're most interested in is the one that we live on. And so that sort of sun-Earth connection, what the sun does and how it impacts the Earth, is really the heart of heliophysics.
Yeah, and I guess that's why studying the sun is so important for NASA to sort of get at that connection.
Absolutely. We need to understand our relationship with our star and how it impacts our life here on Earth. But the really cool thing is our sun is an average star. And, you know, that makes it sound boring. But the thing about it is an average star. So it is like many, many other stars in the universe. And so by understanding how our star works, it means that we can learn about other stars in other stellar systems. And we call it an ordinary star, but it's the only star we know that actually sustains life. So it has an awesome responsibility. So it's really an extraordinary, ordinary star. And as we want to search for planets that could sustain life in the universe, we need to understand what kind of stars they need to have neighboring those planets.
You know, I'm wondering, with this big year and us really studying heliophysics so much during this approaching solar maximum, does NASA get better data during a solar max and not good data in a solar minimum, or how does that work? Do you plan for these big years?
So every bit of NASA data is precious and is totally used to its full potential. But I will say that as we come into solar maximum, we certainly see our star getting much more active. So you learn a lot about the star when it's quiet. So during solar minimum, it's quiet and you have less activity and you study more like the base state of the star. As it moves up and crests towards solar maximum, we get a lot of activity, a lot of those beautiful flares, big coronal loops that, you know, looks like loops stretching off the sun. They can explode and send billions of tons of solar material into planetary space. And so that is actually moving at millions of miles an hour. And sometimes those events are facing the Earth. And then we track it as it leaves the sun. We track it all the way through into planetary space until it impacts the Earth. And then we study the impact that it has on our own planet.
And of course, I guess the big thing is looking at that space weather and all that activity on the sun, we can better plan for it and maybe protect ourselves a little better.
Absolutely. If you actually know something big is coming, you can protect. You know, you might even say, hey, this is a huge event that's coming. We want to make sure that we protect our power grid. If you took the power grid and safed it and take it down to a nice safe state, you can always bring it back again after the event has passed. If you get a catastrophic failure of a power grid, that's really hard to recover from.
What kind of bad things are we talking about?
Well, I mean, there's the very historic Carrington event, which was actually the first time that we realized what happened on the sun actually impacted the Earth. And during that event, the telegraph system in the US, which was kind of like the internet of the day, collapsed, and it was down for many days. And so, you know, people couldn't communicate. If we sort of move to closer, 1989, we saw the catastrophic failure of the Hydro-Quebec power grid that went down sort of in New York and Canada. And then in 1991, we had the twin communications spacecraft, the Annex. They failed. 1997, we had Telstar 401. We had Galaxy 5, I think, in 98. The big storm that happened in 2000, we actually saw, you know, many sort of impacts to power grids, but fortunately, no big catastrophic failures. So the ability to predict what we'll see here on Earth really helps us to protect and hopefully have no harmful impact.
Trying to develop a heliophysics big year bucket list kind of thing. So if you're trying to think of like the kind of thing that you want to see during this solar maximum this year, what are some of the things that Nikki Fox, heliophysicist extraordinaire, wants to see?
Oh, well, I mean, you can't go wrong with a total solar eclipse, can you? I mean, if you ever want to understand how beautiful our star is, seeing it during a total solar eclipse and actually seeing that corona and that hazy atmosphere around the sun, I mean, for me, it was magical when I saw that in 2017. Of course, the annular eclipse, we've already checked that off. That's a very unusual eclipse. The moon needs to be at a very particular distance so you can see that kind of ring of fire. But talking of solar maximum, I mean, a bucket list has got to be a beautiful aurora. So, you know, go where the aurora are and see a spectacular dancing light show in the sky. It looks like billowing curtains of light. It's just a beautiful thing to see. When you see it for the first time, you're like, wow, is that real? So that would be a bucket list. And that directly ties into solar maximum. And then, of course, check out Parker Solar Probe and look at where Parker is, because the end of the heliophysics big year is following Parker Solar Probe's seventh Venus flyby. We come into that final configuration. We're below 4 million miles above the sun's surface. So learning about Parker, checking it out, and even sort of visualizing when you see that total solar eclipse and you see all those streamers, visualize where Parker Solar Probe would be at that closest approach. It's just magical.
The interesting thing, Franklin, is the Dunn Solar Telescope will be looking at the exact same spot of the sun that the Parker Solar Probe is flying through on its closest approach. This will allow scientists to gather data and analyze it from multiple locations so they can better understand the surface of the sun.
Well, Blair, I like to say calibrate and validate. And just to clarify, Parker Solar Probe will be flying too fast to be seen by this telescope. In fact, Parker Solar Probe is the fastest man-made object ever to be put in space, flying at 395,000 miles per hour.
I mean, Franklin, that truly is ludicrous speed.
But just to let you know, NASA will be able to take observations from both Parker Solar Probe and ground-based observatories like the one behind us and put them together to give us a better understanding of our closest star.
Man, I love fun facts, Franklin. You got a fun fact? How about this one? You see the Dunn Solar Telescope behind us? Pretty tall, right?
Yes.
136 feet. But you know what? That's only approximately one-third of the telescope. The other two-thirds are down below, inside the mountain. It's formidable, but very simply made, with only three mirrors and two windows. The entire optical path of the telescope is kept in a vacuum to eliminate distortions from the atmosphere. And the telescope is so powerful, it could read a license plate from 60 miles away. And although the telescope weighs over 250 tons, it's suspended on a Mercury float system that you can move entirely with your foot. With your foot!
That was way more than one fun fact. Save some.
It's the altitude. It's getting to me.
Well, man, while you calm down and reacclimate yourself, we're going to take a look at NASA's space-based sun missions with Antti Pulkkinen, who is the director of heliophysics at the Goddard Space Flight Center. So, Antti, as we enter the heliophysics big year, can you tell us a little about the missions that you are managing in your department?
Yeah, so heliophysics big year is really a celebration of the excitement of heliophysics and also the societal dimension of heliophysics that we call space weather. And it's composed of a number of major events. The Parker Solar Probe later this year in December will be flying only 9 solar radii away from the solar surface, probing right through the heart of the solar atmosphere where we experience these massive solar eruptions. So in that context, of course, the Parker Solar Probe is one of the key solar and heliospheric missions in the fleet right now, but there's a whole spectrum of other missions as well. Another big one is Solar Dynamics Observatory, or SDO, that takes ultraviolet imagery at multiple different wavelengths, allowing us to pierce through different layers of the solar atmosphere. Two additional missions are Solar and Heliospheric Observatory, or SOHO. This is a joint mission with the European Space Agency. It's been operating several decades. Also taking imagery of the sun, and also has instrumentation called coronagraphs, which is kind of an artificial solar eclipse, if you will. There's an occulting disk that blocks that bright solar disk and allows us to image the dimmer solar atmospheres. And STEREO is another major NASA mission in the solar domain. STEREO used to be a pair of spacecraft taking imagery of the sun from the different directions, allowing us to extract three-dimensional information about the dynamics of the solar atmosphere.
Through the missions that you're operating through heliophysics here at NASA, what are you ultimately trying to find out about the sun?
So in heliophysics, we ask a lot of different fundamental questions. One is, why and how does the sun vary? We're also trying to answer questions such as, how do the planetary environments respond in terms of flows of mass, energy, and momentum coming from the sun? And then the third is the societal dimension. We're also asking questions such as, what are implications for life and society? So we're really trying to pierce the understanding of the full flow of physics from the solar atmosphere through the interplanetary space, through the planetary magnetospheres, and all the way down to the upper atmosphere, and trying to understand how the whole system acts as a linked, interlinked system of systems, and also at the same time address the societal dimension. How does this system impact our infrastructure in space and on the ground, and also impact humans in space?
Now, are there some elusive answers out there about the sun that you really want to find out about?
There are still a lot of fundamental questions that are open in our field. Parker Solar Probe, for example, one of the key targets of the mission is to allow us to understand what creates so-called solar wind. There's this continuous stream of charged particles coming from the solar atmosphere, and we do not really understand 100% the fundamental physics behind it. So Parker Solar Probe will be providing us that observational information from that domain to allow us to understand what accelerates the solar wind, this continuous stream of particles coming from the sun. Second category of open questions is, what powers and triggers the massive solar eruptions? These eruptions that can throw billions of tons of solar material to the surrounding solar system. We do not understand the detailed physics of what triggers those solar eruptions. So that will be one of the holy grails for our field, because if we answer that question, we can ultimately also predict from the first principle solar explosions before they take place.
What is the future of heliophysics? What missions are on the horizon to continue your study of the sun?
We have a whole series of missions in development right now for all individual subdomains of heliophysics: solar physics, heliospheric physics, planetary magnetosphere physics, and physics of the upper atmospheres. A couple examples: PUNCH mission is being developed right now, and PUNCH will be a constellation of spacecraft taking imagery of the solar atmosphere, allowing to again understand what creates that flow of mass, energy, and momentum coming from the solar atmosphere. Another example in the domain of the upper atmosphere is called EASY mission. An EASY mission will be imaging the electric currents in the Earth's upper atmosphere, allowing us to understand what is the dynamics driving those electrical current systems in the upper atmosphere. And another key flagship mission, the big mission that is right now in development, is called Geospace Dynamics Constellation, or GDC, which will be a 6 spacecraft constellation orbiting the low Earth orbit and allowing us to provide answers to the physics of the response of the upper atmosphere to these flows coming from the sun.
So it's easy to say that the future of heliophysics here at NASA is going to be pretty bright.
It's very bright, like the sun itself.
Like the sun itself. You took the words around, Malcolm. Great, great. It's a good play on words by our friend Auntie. But you can see how everybody's excited about this subject. You know, people have been fascinated with the sun since the beginning of time, and for thousands of years, they've studied and observed the sun. You do know that the telescope dates back to the 1600s?
It's crazy, right? This history. And of course, even locally, they've discovered solstice sites, such as Wally's Dome and Wizard's Peak, that were built and used by indigenous people to observe and track the movement of the sun. But when we think of the local history of Sunspot Solar Observatory, it starts right behind us with a telescope they call the Grain Bin Dome. This was a grain bin silo that they ordered directly from the Sears and Roebuck catalog. Inside, they built the first solar telescope here, and only the second coronagraph in the Western Hemisphere.
They built it here because the temperatures are right, the weather's good, and the elevation here at Sacramento Peak is over 9,000 feet, which gives them very clear images. This location is so good that they actually built the Dunn Observatory up the hill here, about 40 yards.
It really is impressive. And I tell you, since they began operation in 1969, the Dunn Solar Telescope has been providing daily full-disk images of the sun for scientists to study everywhere.
And as we fast forward to 2024, the technology has advanced so fast that amateur astronomers from around the world can observe the sun from as close as their own backyard.
It's probably not as easy to get a grain bin silo from Sears and Roebuck anymore either. But fortunately, you don't need it. If you buy a solar telescope, get a small digital camera, with a little know-how, you can begin to do amateur astronomy in a significant and profound way.
And that's very important during the heliophysics big year. In fact, during the total solar eclipse, people along the path will be able to see and witness the eclipse and also observe it with high-powered telescopes.
Recently, I had a chance to talk with Bob Baer about just such an effort, the Deb Initiative. For the Deb Initiative, amateur astronomers are going to make observations along the path of totality and not only provide images, but provide imagery data for people and scientists to study and enjoy everywhere. Let's check it out. Bob, we know how NASA is prepared to study the sun from space, especially during this big heliophysics year. What are some of the things we're doing to study the sun from the Earth?
So from the Earth, what the project that I am leading with Matt Penn is the Dynamic Eclipse Broadcast Initiative. And that's a citizen science project. We have just over 80 teams right now, 80 volunteer teams, some of them in the path of totality, some of them outside the path of totality. And what they're doing, they're imaging the corona during the eclipse and they're imaging the partial eclipse so that we can see that inner corona, the parts of it that is kind of hard to image from satellites, and we can image it quickly so we can fill in some of the gaps in the data and trace features that we see back to the surface of the sun as well. And of course, you know, as a citizen science project, as a volunteer project, it gets a lot of people, especially youth, interested in heliophysics and studying the sun.
So Bob, how are these amateur astronomers actually getting the imagery and the data for Deb?
They're using standardized equipment, and we're using stuff that most amateur astronomers do use. So small telescopes on tracking mounts. They get on an object like the sun and are able to track it. These are called astrographs because they're just little lenses, and they have a solar filter on the front of them and a camera, an astrophotography camera on the back. And these link up to a computer, and we're actually just using standardized astrophotography software, a package called SharpCap that captures the images. We capture movies, that gets output to another program. It sharpens the images. And then those are the images that get uploaded that people can see on Eclipse Day from our website.
Will actual scientists be able to access this data and compare it with maybe some of the data they're getting from space?
Absolutely. On some of the satellites, at least, you end up with a little bit of a gap in the data because when you black out the sun to create this artificial eclipse, you get a little bit of a gap between the sun and where the actual data of the corona starts to be picked up. And so we're filling in that gap. But not only that, because this is a network of telescopes, so we have telescopes from Mexico all the way through Canada, all along the eclipse path, and so we can create this full data set. So even, you know, groups that are studying this that might have a telescope in one or two locations, they can compare what they see with our data set. So if they see a feature and they're not quite sure about it, they just want to verify it, they can use our data set to do that.
How important was it that all the DEB teams have the exact same equipment and the exact same telescopes and cameras in terms of the data.
If you use different telescopes, different cameras, different lens systems, the images are different. What I mean by that is the size of the image is different, the scale is different. And so for us, we're taking the data from each site. So we're taking movies, basically, during the partial phase, and then we're doing HDR images during totality. And so each site creates one HDR image of the corona that ends up being one frame in a movie. And the movie is the data as that eclipse path moves across North America. And so it's really important that the equipment's the same because you can't align those images from one site to the next easily if you've got different equipment. And actually, even though the equipment's, you know, identical, there still are variations in the equipment, so we still have to stretch and compress the images a little bit to get everything to line up.
That's awesome. Now, you're not doing this for the first time on April 8th. You've done some beta testing. In fact, you went to Australia in 2023.
Right.
Took some students. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we trained quite a bit before we even went to Australia because we had 8 or 9 students going that were part of a study abroad group. Everybody was trained on how to use telescopes. And so they took these smaller telescopes and we gave them sun funnels, which is this oil funnel that's been modified to sit on an eyepiece with a piece of rear projection material on it. And you get these pretty incredible images of the sun projected on them.
Yeah, sort of so more people can sort of see it, right?
Yeah, rather than looking through an eyepiece, which, you know, you can't do that without a special solar scope or special filters in place. It's safer for an outreach person. You can explain what's going on as people can see it, and you can see that they're seeing it, whereas when you look through a telescope eyepiece, you know, you might not even be sure if they're seeing what you're talking about. What happened, we didn't have quite the right eyepiece for the projection. So we used what we had, and the image was a little small, and it was a little bright because it was smaller than it was intended to be. And then I had told the girls, hey, you know, when totality happens, pull those solar funnels because you're going to want to look at totality through that telescope eyepiece. It's safe, and you can do it during totality. Well, it was a really short totality in Australia. It was like 52 seconds. So we didn't have that much time. It was pretty bright. And they just decided, we're leaving this on. We're leaving this set up. And they saw totality on it, which I had never seen before. I had heard that you could do that sort of thing, but I had never seen it. So not only did they see it, they clicked some pictures. So they got the first known images of totality on a sun funnel.
Wow.
And they're spectacular.
DEB is not only taking data, you guys are actually making history.
Yeah, I guess so. and doing outreach. It was a wonderful outreach event too. So doing the outreach to the people. And yeah, that was a one of a kind unique image.
We finally made it inside the Dunn Solar Telescope. And unfortunately, we've run out of time for this show. So go watch the eclipse and check our next show where you'll not only find out about the eclipse, but you'll find out about how this cool telescope operates.
You're watching NASA Edge.
An inside and outside look
at all things NASA.